Here we go. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky and LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. And the owner of the place texts us late at night to find out which day the Eastern Conference finals start. On today's show, of course, we will talk about Sixers-Raptors Game 6, and we look forward to an electrifying Mike's Ref Corner as Mike discusses the Joel Embiid flagrant foul late in the game. We're all looking forward to that. The lottery party is Tuesday, and there is a significant chance that it could be completely fucking insane. The Eastern Conference Finals start on Wednesday, so theoretically this would be the biggest pep rally in basketball history. Some tickets left. Go to rightsrickysanchez.com. A reminder, parking is not free, but if you go to Express Parking at Jet Row and show your ticket, it's only $7. Mike and I were talking about the live Ricky that we're going to do there earlier this week. I think I'm definitely going to do a poem. Got to do some more slam poetry. Sponce Lorette. Of course, the potential rebanning of Bill Simmons. We will raise a banner of us raising the banner. Pictures with my dog, a 7'3" cardboard cutout of Boban Marjanovic, a lot of drinks, and a lot of sweaty cell phone pictures at our final signature event, the lottery party on Tuesday. Please be there. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderous pair that went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push, now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy that is definitely in better spirits than he was on Tuesday night. Tuesday night, is that when the game was? It was. Mike Levin. I'm assuming you're in better spirits. I haven't discussed this with you, but that is my guess that you're in better spirits.
No, that was better.
Yeah.
That was better. That felt good. That felt really good. They needed to win by 40, and they did. Another 40-point win, just swinging back and forth in this series. Man, they just can't. It's so easy to just say, like, effort and energy and, like, just getting to loose balls and getting after it. But, like, that seemed like that's what it was. Like, it seemed like they just wanted it more. I'm not fucking Jalen Rose or whatever, but, like, or Jim,
you might
or,
be a little bit Jalen
Rose.
Rose.
I'm not Jim Lynam.
But like, you might be Jim Lynam.
I don't think so. But like that's what it was. Like they didn't have it in Game 5. I was very disappointed to watch them just lay a total egg. And they came out tonight and they were just fucking electric. And the crowd was electric. And it felt really good. Everybody looked really good. Ben, maybe his best game as a pro, or at least his most important game as a pro, and he fucking delivered some very Jimmy Butler moments that I will be watching in the inside of my eyelids for the rest of my life. And then B just being a sort of regular plus 40, despite the fact
just
that
a normal everyday plus 40.
And we'll get to it, but I everybody delivered, like all 7 players that are playable on this team absolutely delivered tonight, and they needed to, and I feel fucking great.
John Simmons delivered in crunch time, immediately comes in, tries to shake and bake.
He's so bad.
He can't be on this team next year.
I will eat his $5 million salary. He can't be on this team.
My favorite thing, I didn't even know he could do it, was he caught the offensive rebound and he somehow traveled without moving. It was unbelievable. It was really great. Your initial point about the I've started writing your things down because you always will say something that I have something to say about, but then there's always like 4 minutes after.
Sure.
So I have to write down.
Yeah, you just got to wait for me to tire myself out.
So the get after it hustle, you know, sort of thing that you talked about. I don't deny that it's true. And I think at home, it's, you know, you sort of have the crowd behind you too. But it almost seems like, or that, like, success in play begets that. Like, that it's almost like sometimes a couple of shots going down almost makes that easier. And that, like, that becomes harder if you get down. Like, if you're down 9 points or something in the first quarter, it just, it seems harder to get after the loose balls, even though maybe it's more important then. So I don't know, like, which comes first, the good play or the hard play, but they were both there today. You know, they hit shots, of course, which is important. And Embiid still doesn't look like himself, but also didn't look like a dead Embiid that we saw the other day. And this is just like the weirdest series to have any sort of vibe on whatsoever. Because three of the games have been blowouts, and then three of them have been blowouts.
I think four.
Four of them have been blowouts.
If you count tonight as a blowout, which I do.
Yeah. So yeah, two Sixers blowouts, two Raptors blowouts, and then two super ugly games. So
yeah.
The fact that it's gone seven games says this. It, like, they're obviously evenly matched in a lot of ways.
Kind of.
But there hasn't been...
How fucking weird they are.
Yeah, yes, they're both really weird. The games where the Raptors are bad, it seems like they have no good players.
Yeah.
Like, aside from Kawhi Leonard. Like,
right.
Kyle Lowry can truly look like shit. And Pascal Siakam, I'm sure, is very good, but, like, is not... is definitely shaken as a jump shooter in this series, and not a fantastic ball handler. So, like, the Raptors don't look, and their bench looks worse than ours. So, although it's a seven game series, none of the games have given me any sense of what Game Seven could even be like. I have no idea. My prediction at the beginning of this was that if the series went long, it would favor the Sixers because I believe in their connectivity and want to more than I believe in the Raptors, which is even more horseshit. This is like the Hinky Process podcast, and all we're talking about is fucking loose balls and connectivity, all fucking horseshit. But I do believe that. So man, what a game. What a game.
Should we start with this game, or should we start with Game 7?
Let's start with this game, then we'll get to Game 7. I think I want to back up a couple of steps and just talk about the reaction of the last couple of days. I think this is just about every sport all the time now because of the internet. Every sport all the time is very football-y in its reaction, meaning that every game is sort of like overreacted to. Mm-hmm. And that includes us. Like, you were fucking lit on Tuesday night. Now I think people took that further, you know, in the next couple of days, it became about firing Brett Brown, trading Ben Simmons. Joel Embiid is a fat slob. Should will his way through sickness and so on and so forth. But it's been a wild couple of days before this one. It's the swings in how we feel about the team and how everybody feels about the team have been pretty crazy during this series.
Yeah. Setting ourselves on fire after losses and, like, riding around in dog masks, like, it's just lathering ourselves in Crisco and just, like, cheering a guy eating horse shit. It's a very thin, like a very small line between those things happening. And sometimes it's just like a, you know, Tobias Harris hitting his shots. Man, I'm happy they won. I'm happy that they won that game. I'm happy they came out strong. If there was definite danger, I thought the crowd was great, but there was definite danger of if they didn't get out to a big, like a nice early push, that the crowd would have just been full of anxiety the rest of the game. And you could even see it when they took like an 18, 20 point lead and then they cut it to like 9 and the crowd started booing. And obviously the anti-booing pearl clutching caucus of reporters that are just shocked that a team would boo after a fan base would boo after a bad stretch had
that
to come
means
out.
You Unterberger. That means you Unterberger. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry.
It's they had to come out and do their thing, and then they play well again, and they cheer. That's how it goes. And I enjoyed the. And there were levels to the booing and the cheering. I thought the the crowd was very invested in the game from the beginning and like hanging on every little moment, like Pat McCaw not being ready to check in and us having to wait for him to like put everything, take his clothes off basically, and then getting pissed off about that, to all the foul calls, to I thought after all the like aggression that Simmons was showing and taking the ball to the rim and all that stuff, he got to the line and he missed the first foul shot, came up way short, and then they started cheering him in between, like wheeling him on, and I thought that was just like this. The fan base was locked in, and I was really I was really impressed and proud of that.
Well, when we had the whole boo discussion during the Brooklyn series, one thing I said was I think a booing crowd is also more likely to be an awesome, positive crowd because they're so fucking like. They're just on edge. Like it was a crowd on edge. They, you mentioned nervous energy, and they want to get behind the team. Like that's what they want to do. They want to be a great crowd. And when the team doesn't play well, they have to focus that energy into something. And cheering when they're not playing well sounds like you're fucking crazy. So I would rather a booing crowd when they're not playing well because I think it means overall the crowd's going to be better. Unless you're like a robot, like they are in Oklahoma City or whatever, I'll take the wild crowd. And I would bet, you know, Mike, I was looking at prices of the tickets on SeatGeek.
Here we go.
And you know where you can find out if you're getting the best deal. And they were way cheaper than the other night, the other day. Game four tickets, the cheapest ticket I saw, I think, was the day the game was $168, and I saw them get down to $48. Today. So that's an enormous difference. So I think what that does too is it allows people who go to games who maybe couldn't normally afford to go to games, and you maybe get a louder, more excited crowd in there too. So it was good. It was a good game. Let's start with Ben, because Ben shouldered. Ben and Joe, you know, the centerpieces of the team, shouldered most of the criticism over the last 2 days. And, you know, Simmons did, I think, exactly what everybody wanted him to do. You know, he definitely, it seemed like, had more possessions as, like, initiator early in the game than he has in recent games. Like, in recent games, he'd bring the ball up and immediately, you know, pass it off, but it didn't seem like he did that. And he's been real good on the offensive glass in the playoffs, or at least the times that he's been there, I've noticed it. And there was just like, you know, there was an energy to how he played offensively. And the team is just a totally different team when he's like that. Just a totally different team. And it was huge.
Absolutely. I mean, 9 of 13 from the field, 21 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, no turnovers. And that's really good. Like, he just looked really aggressive and solid, and he was... I thought he did a good job of staying active when he was off ball, which meant rolling to the rim, which meant sealing, trying to get pin a guy on his... trying to get a guy to front him so he could just, like, have a nice lob, and that happened a couple times. That putback dunk was... unreal. Anytime he does anything, anytime anyone does anything over or around or with Kawhi nearby, I just find it very impressive. And so having a putback dunk with Kawhi in the vicinity, having to like bump him out of position was really, really nice. And he was pushing like his life depended on it. This is Simmons. It was really good. Everyone, anytime Ben does anything aggressive, the people are going to say, why can't he do this all the time? Which I get. I get it. It's a little frustrating because, like, not everyone is... It's like when people tell LeBron, like, you should just take the ball to the rim every time, and it's like you just can't have that level of intensity on every single possession. You'll just, like, die. But he was playing with a lot of energy, a lot of pace. I thought the Raptors still did a pretty damn good job of getting back on defense, so it wasn't like it was just a clean run out very often, except for that Embiid block, and Mike Scott tip ahead to a very... easy Ben transition. He's so fucking fast when he just turns the burners on. It's unbelievable. I was really impressed. I was really happy. I thought he moved the ball well and got position. I thought he was open a couple more times and they didn't fight him inside. I'd love for them to look at the tape and see if they can get more of that. But the sequence for me that did it was I thought he played really good defense on Kawhi all night and made it hard for him. And he got into foul trouble a little early, so he wasn't on him the whole night, but I thought when Ben was on him, I thought he did a good job. But the sequence for me that did it was early in the second half, he attacked Kawhi twice in a row. And if you've been watching Ben on Kawhi his whole career, he just never does that. He did it a couple times, and Kawhi just took it from him because he's too big and too strong to get to. Ben just uses his strength and guile to get around guys, and Kawhi's just not going to get bullied at all. And so to see Ben attack Kawhi twice in a row, first time draw a foul, second time go around him and finish with a scoop, I mean, it was just, that's a very encouraging thing to see. It's a really very encouraging thing because Kawhi is, I think, the best one-on-one defender in the league and probably the best off-ball defender in the league also. He's just impossible to play against, and that's why you see the Sixers go on a run every time Kawhi sits for whatever 3 minutes a game. Those two plays, and I hope that continues going forward.
It's hard to judge with him because he makes so few facial expressions and like emotion at all, but he did seem kind of disconnected tonight, I guess. I don't know.
You're talking about Ben or Kawhi?
Kawhi. Okay. Yeah, I guess they're both. But as unemotive as Ben can be, Kawhi is like, Kawhi makes him look like Embiid, I guess, in how quiet he is. And credit to Ben with the defense, but Kawhi just didn't really look like he had it tonight. And that's two games in a row. You know, the game five, he wasn't great in either.
still but, 9 of 20 for 29, 12 and 5. But yeah, on the scale.
Oh, tonight?
On the scale tonight? Of Kawhi, yeah, still.
Yeah.
Not quite as good.
Yeah.
I want to shout out Ben. This is kind of a JJ thing, but the Sixers posted the Sixers account tweeted Ben's reaction to JJ doing the up and under scoop layup. And it was fun to see Ben like emote a little bit more on the sidelines and seeing him like get excited and jump around. That's we need more of that. We didn't talk about it in game five because I was too mad to take any positives from it. But there was a moment during game five on the bench when the game was already decided and they pulled their starters that Ben like tapped and beat on the head, like sort of like, we got it. Like, don't sweat it. Like, we're still good. Like, hang in there type thing. And it was a nice moment. And I like that they're, you know, obviously you can see how much they're playing with each other, finding each other. I thought Ben was on the receiving end of a couple Embiid passes, a couple Jimmy passes also. And I just thought that was a nice moment to see the teams, even in the shitty, horrible game where it seemed like they didn't ever play with each other before and didn't give a shit. It was nice to see them all like have each other's backs and not, there was not any Celtics level knives out for each other. And I think, for a team that just came together a couple months ago, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, for sure, I agree. Before we get to Embiid, the other guy that got a lot of guff this week, let's talk about our sponsor, Big Barker Dog Beds. So I got one in the mail at work today. Now Rebel already has one, but I told Eric from Big Barker that in the Rebel photo booth at the lottery party, we will have Rebel on a Big Barker. And he said, we've made some updates to it. Let me send you a new one for Rebel to be on a lottery party. So I have it on there. So maybe I'll put when the lottery party's over, you know, maybe we should give it away. Should we give it away to somebody who takes a picture with Rebel? Maybe.
I'm on board. I'll give everything away. I'll give you away.
Okay.
You have to go home with somebody.
What? How are we going to, who's going to edit the podcast?
No, I mean, you just give it for the night.
Oh, well, I have to talk to my wife about that.
Did you sleep on the couch? Rebel, have thoughts?
Rebel sleeps on a Big Barker because I only want the best for Rebel. Donovan, Mike's dog, sleeps on a Big Barker. Big Barker is the only dog bed that has been engineered by experts to support your dog's joints. That is a serious thing. Most dogs end up sleeping on shitty beds, which are, you know, no different than a blanket, and they're basically sleeping on the floor. And then as the dog gets older, you know, it gets harder to move around because their joints get achy, and that's what Big Barker's for. If you go to bigbarker.com/Ricky, bigbarker.com/Ricky, you'll see Rebel there on the bed, and you see how supportive and thick the Big Barker mattress is. And if you order one there, you get the Process Pup patch. You get two of them with your Big Barker dog bed, and you just iron it on right on the bed there, or you iron it on whatever you want. Iron it on your own bed. You know, who's going to stop you? And that foam, that thick supportive foam, has a 10-year warranty. So the bed is not cheap, a couple $100, but it's going to last you 10 years. The foam will not flatten, or they will replace it for free. And forgetting about the value, the most important thing is that you are supporting your dog, especially big dogs. Dogs over 50 pounds, up to 80% of them develop arthritis as they age. So, and it says Big Barker, but it's for any dog size. There's a Barker Jr. for tiny dogs. Rebel's like 40 pounds. He's a medium-sized dog. Get yourself a Big Barker. 1 year at-home trial. If you don't like it, send it back, and they will even pay for shipping to get it back to you for free. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds.
Woof, woof, baby.
Joel Embiid got a lot of shit this week.
Sure.
I think some was... You know, like the Joel Embiid diet thing, like what he eats has become a pretty big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, as a professional athlete, the cleaner you eat, the better shape you're going to be in. And though that does seem to happen with players as they get older, not when they're younger, you know, like when they're smarter and they want to maintain. But like the story about just how much junk food he eats has really... like been derived from basically like three different things. The Shirley Temple story years ago.
Yeah.
Was
that before he even played a game?
Yes, that was before he played a game. That was when that shithead wrote that article about him being 300 pounds.
Right.
Which he might have been or whatever. But so the Shirley Temple story, there is the Landry Shamet, he gets four Chick-fil-A sandwiches and four milkshakes story. And then after a Brooklyn game, TMZ caught him going to Shake Shack. Now, that does not mean that every meal he eats is fast food. I don't know what he eats, to be truthful. Like, there was video of him with his shirt off doing karaoke around the All-Star break, and he looked like he was in good shape to me. But there's been a lot of talk about his dedication to his body, which I think is unfortunate that it happens around him getting like the flu or something,
right?
Because that it's not really the same thing, even though it is, it isn't really, which are all fine things to be worried about. You know, I think it is, given his size and his importance to the franchise and his history, I think it's important that he takes good care of himself, but it got a little overboard this week, I think, in that he was hurting the team and so on and so forth. And I really like he is so necessary because he is so able to affect the game even when he's not great. One, because he's so great, but two, because their backup centers are so fucking terrible. And he was really good tonight, and it was good to see him. The team rolling, I think, gave him like the oomph to get his offense rolling in the second half, which still hadn't happened, even though he was a plus 30 in the first half, which is crazy. It was just... the blocks on Kawhi Leonard were fucking incredible. And he is just like, he's an all-world player. And seeing him, like, if he's going to play like he did tonight, I don't think any team can beat them if he can play like that. I don't think at least any team in the East, you know, if he turns in performances like that, I don't see them losing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's...
I'm sorry, that's a lot.
He's really good. I think everyone talking shit about him is just bullshit. Would I like to see him like commit to eating very healthy and doing whatever, yoga and going vegan like Jahlil Okafor? Like, sure. It worked out for Okafor. That's why he's the best player on the planet.
Yep.
But like, just like everyone's frustrated, right? We talked about this last time. Everyone's frustrated that he was sick. And I think tonight was the best he's looked health wise, bounce wise since I guess he had one good game in this series, but mostly since the Brooklyn series, and he's just so integral to this team's success. They can't play without him. And that's frustrating on a team level and team building level. We've talked about that many times before. But he just affects the game in so many ways. He could just stay on defense the entire game and just not even cross half court and just be a guy who plays defense. And he would be like a very good player. Like, he's absolutely that necessary there. And his two blocks on Kawhi were obviously the flashiest ones, but man, he just gets out on guys when he has to. He affects shots. He rebounds his position well, which is something that we were, as a rookie, it was like, oh, is he going to be like just a fine rebounder? And he's become a fantastic one. He can switch onto guards. He switched onto Lowry a bunch tonight. They basically made the decision to just let Siakam shoot, and I think that's sort of that's sort of Milwaukee's strategy with like letting guys shoot that aren't used to it. Like, even if you hit a couple, like, you're still kind of uncomfortable about it. You're still like, Siakam was open every time he touched the ball, and he only took six threes. And I think that's probably their strategy, to just keep Embiid as close to the basket as possible and say, like, if he wants to take a three every single time down, then he's going to have to like reckon with himself for that. I don't even want to talk about like people like criticizing him for being soft. Like,
yeah,
it's just so nonsense. But offensively, I liked seeing him step into a couple threes. The fact that he had one field goal in the first half. All of his points were from a single three pointer, which is just shocking. And he was still a plus 30. One for eight
plus
from the field.
30, Mike.
Plus 30 in the first half, and going 1 of 8 with one three.
I think they were up. They were up 15 or something, and he was a plus 30 in one half of basketball. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Pretty good. That's pretty good. I still think he made a bunch of nice passes tonight. Some they didn't convert on. I still think he had five turnovers. He just holds onto the ball too much sometimes, and like wants to dribble it from outside too much. And it's like, come on, just give it up, repost, reposition. That frustrates me, and I think will always. But when he confidently steps into things, and when he goes to the rim under control, he's awful tough to stop. And I love it when he has his head up to find guys. And I like that Brett tried to do his best with keep getting him at least some time with Gasol on the bench.
Yeah, he threw a... You remember that cross-court pass to Butler when he got double-teamed?
There was one to Ennis,
a couple
too.
Games ago. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The one to Butler was a few games ago. It was like he was being double teamed. It was an incredible pass. The one to Ennis missed the shot, but he threw that cross court pass again. And I sort of think now that we've seen that pass twice, that's going to be a new thing. Like, that's going to be a thing that is in his repertoire. It seems like he is looking for that pass and able to make that pass. And like, if you can get it to that guy in one pass rather than, you know, throwing it to the guy at the top of the key who throws it over, there's a lot better chance that guy's going to be wide open by skipping a pass like that. And it sort of seems like that passing has come out of nowhere in the playoffs. Like, that was the most glaring weakness to his game is his passing out of the post. And it seems like just in these playoffs, he's gotten better at it.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. Because, you know, there were times when it's like, all right, they don't have enough teammates. We want Embiid to do everything. But that's not the case anymore. There's going to be an all-star level player wide open if they double him. And they're going to keep doubling him because they're afraid of him just, you know, drawing fouls on Gasol or whatever. And so he's got to be able to be willing to make those passes and quickly identify it. And I think he could still work on that, and that's going to be part of his game going forward. But, you know, tonight, just really, really solid, really good. A plus 40. He's going to be the best player in the league really soon. And I really, I love him. I'm so glad he's here. Everyone's going to have takes. It's the playoffs. There's only one game on, so people are like focused. They're laser focused on the game and just dying to spew their bad takes somewhere. And so people are like, the Sixers should actually trade Embiid for like Jamal Murray. And it's like, it's like, guys, you don't trade the best young stars in the game. You just don't do it. And you figure it out and you build around them and you say, like, these are going to be our guys for the next 10 years, and we'll figure it out. And they brought us to a game seven, and I'm very happy about it.
So Jimmy Butler. Butler in the second quarter was, you know, like, one of the things Butler's going to have to do when he's here is, like, is be able to split time with Ben as an initiator. Like, it's not going to be Butler all the time. And because Ben needs to stay involved that way too, I think. And Simmons is going to get better, and he's going to do more of that. And there's going to be more games where Butler's going to have to pick his spots. But his spot in the second quarter, like his, you know, that I think that stretch, like that last 2 or 3 minute stretch in the second quarter to keep the lead from being like 9 to get it to 16 or 15, whatever it was, that's enormous. You know, it's the old Steve Mix down by less than 10 rule, get it to less than 10. And it felt really, really different. And I think it's a blow to the other team as they chip away at the lead. And then all of a sudden in 2 minutes, the lead is as much as it's been the entire game. And that was an enormous sequence for him and for the team. So he played great, and especially in that really, really important time in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think this might have been his best game as a Sixer, like all around. I thought his defense was really good on Kawhi, defending without fouling. He didn't have any fouls in this game. Picked his pocket. You don't see that with Kawhi. You just don't see people do that. And for that sequence that you were talking about, hitting the floater, where when that floater's on, when he can have that little mid-range that he can pull up off of it, because he's got three levels to it where he can, if somebody's playing him to drive, he can sort of step back and rise up. Or if he can get the guy on his hip and he drives in, he can do that little floater, or he can go right to the rim and draw fouls. If that floater's on, he's impossible to stop. He's just impossible to stop. You're going to foul him or he's going to score. And so we had that first one with the floater, and then the next play poked it out of Kawhi's hands. And then, like, it was... like kind of, it was a poke and like scoop, unbelievable, like dexterity to like retain that ball, and then go full court and finish, and then like peacock to the crowd. I just loved it. It was such a Jimmy moment, and I'm so glad he's here. I'm so glad you were wrong. It's beautiful.
Wait a minute, you didn't fucking want him.
I did want him, Ted.
You did not.
I did.
You did not. You did not. Let me. Everybody who's fucking you and everybody whose takes are on the fucking internet, like fucking Sixers Reddit.
I at least wanted him before the trade happened. Maybe I was conflicted, but I definitely wanted him more than you did.
You wanted him after the trade happened.
No, not before. No. I've been saying the whole time, get get elite players and then figure it out. And here we are.
You're a liar.
Not a chance.
That's fine. I don't care. I don't care. I'll take all the bullets.
Good.
I don't care. I'm
good.
I'm
getting them.
I say what I think. I will continue to say what I think.
But now you're a Jimmy Butler guy.
It is. I'm not a Jimmy Butler guy.
In the playoffs, you have been.
I think I've been very supportive and very fair. Right. Like I'm not couching anything. I thought he played a great game. Like exactly what you want from him. Like I truthfully do want more of this during the year. Like it would be nice if game seven was in Philadelphia instead of in Toronto. Sure. And the regular season matters, you know, until you're already a champion and you can say that it doesn't. But he's been excellent and he was necessary tonight. It was that second quarter was enormous. Like I don't think the Raptors had it tonight, but if they were going to have it, they squashed it right at that time.
Yeah.
That and they, you know, it felt like they were trying to pull away the beginning of the third quarter and they couldn't quite do it, but then they eventually did it. And it was great. It was a great performance by him.
He just attacked the rim relentlessly, like over and over again, and forced switches under Gasol and just said, like, I'm going to make you defend in space. And he did, and Gasol can't do that. Just beat him again and again. And I love watching Jimmy attack the offensive glass. Like, I think we've talked about this before about, like, well, is he as athletic as he used to be? Like, when you have a guy and when he's on your team and you're watching him and you're like, it just didn't feel quite as imposing athletically as he did in the past. Because we've talked about this before, you don't know a guy until you're rooting for him. And Jimmy's athleticism is on full display when he's going for offensive rebounds. Like, when he rises up, it's shocking. It's breathtaking. And I love when he goes after his own miss. And that one where he hit the and one on the Lowry foul up with his own miss, and that was just very nice. And then he gets sort of pinned down in the post sometimes because he'll switch pretty much everything or as much as possible just to communicate easily. I think especially Jimmy. Ben likes to sort of slide through as if he can stay on guys, but Jimmy likes to switch, and so he'll have mismatches in the post where like Ibaka was on him today. And he just poked it out of him and just, like, was too quick and then poked it out and then saved it himself and, like, saved it through Ibaka's legs and led to a run out. And, man, when he's aggressive and when he's on, it's so exciting to have a guy that was saying, basically projecting a level of calm all year that's like, I'm going to be able to flip the switch when it's in the playoffs. And we're basically like, okay, let's see it. And then here he is, and he did it, and he's great. So weird that he's once again back to not shooting threes.
Yep.
Yeah, he took one three tonight. He went from 10 a couple of games ago. I don't know what's happening, but it's fine.
Well, he is.
It's just fine, I guess.
He is a fucking maniac. Like, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but like, there's no way we'll be able to figure out what the fuck is going on with that guy. I don't even think, you know, you read enough of his interviews, I don't think he knows what is going on with him.
He's just talking. He's having a good time. He seems like he came in very relaxed. The Sixers posted a video of him, of like everybody walking in, like into the arena, like doing their like catwalk style, like park and then walk and like have their fashion moment. And Jimmy's just like doing like air kicks to the camera. And it's like he seemed very relaxed. And like, he seems like he's having a good time. He seems like he likes it here. The fan base, I mean, the Philadelphia was made for the level of aggression that Jimmy shows in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
It's really very, it's just very nice.
They eat it up. Oh, they eat it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we will talk about Tobias Harris, Mike Scott, and then we will talk about Game 7 right after we talk about our original sponsor, LL Pivorsky Jewelers. So excited for LL's event on Tuesday night, the lottery party. Very disappointed for LL that this is his final lottery party, his signature event, LL Pivorsky Jewelers and the lottery party. He'll have his VIP area where you can only get into if you buy jewelry from him, which sounds a lot worse when you say it like that. but the thing is that so many people have bought jewelry from him that listen to this podcast. 128 people have bought engagement rings from LL that listen to this podcast, a number that sounds faker and faker every time it grows. And I know it bothers him every time we say the number is fake. But LL, come on, the number's juiced a little bit. I mean, it's probably high, but let's be honest. The reason that people keep going to him is that the jewelry is awesome. And more importantly, he is like an honest, good person who is going to like take time with you and sell you a good ring at a good price. He's not going to look down on you if you don't have like a ton of money to spend on a ring, you know, anything from $1,000 to $100,000, you can buy a ring. A ring from LL. When you see him at the lottery party, make sure you get a sweaty cell phone picture from him. And Mike just...
Man, one drink and there he goes. Yep. The voice is just gone.
Yep. Mike, one question for you. Obviously, we're gonna do the sponsorette at the lottery party on the stage where you will give...
I got to figure out what that exactly entails.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. We'll call all the sponsors up and you'll give one a rose. And that sponsor will be the sponsor. I guess you're the sponsorette.
I'm the sponsor.
How crushed will Lee be if you do not give him the rose?
I don't know. I still have to figure out the bit because I don't know. I don't know that I want to hurt anybody's feelings, but we'll see.
I don't know.
But Lee would definitely, if anybody wins and it's not Lee, he would probably be the most upset.
Yeah, for sure. And that means a lot to us. If you want to buy an engagement ring from Lee, call him first so he knows what you're looking for, or shoot him an email or tweet him. 215-627-2252. Email him at llpivorsky.com. Tweet him at llpivorsky.
All right, I have a bit.
What's that? Oh, you have the bit now? Yeah. Okay, good. And the store is at 707 Walnut in Philly. And for every podcast, he makes donations to Coded by Kids and the Providence Animal Center, who, by the way, will be on site at the lottery party. They'll be collecting the money. You'll be able to take your picture with the Hinky banner and the Bobon thing, and Coded by Kids and Providence Animal Center will be there. And, Mike, I got approval today for Providence Animal Center to bring a puppy to Xfinity Live. Yep. So, LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
Cash out like Mike Scott, then give that money to LL for a nice watch.
So this was the first good Tobias Harris game in a while.
And he shot 6 of 17.
That's so fucking crazy, right? The last game, it didn't seem like he had a good game, and he shot pretty well. Didn't it seem like Tobias Harris played pretty well tonight? Or was it just that everyone went to played well?
Yeah, I think that might have been that. I thought he had a good start early again and then kind of went cold and missed a couple shots that he should have made. But I thought he did a good job of attacking the glass tonight. I think the Sixers' first or second bucket of the game was Tobias driving and two-hand dunking.
Yes.
And he had another one where he like sort of, it was like a half dunk, sort of like just laid it in from like very high. He's just really big. He's so big and strong and can be at the rim very easily. And so when he does that, it opens other things up and makes it easy for him to attack closeouts and stuff. And he had 5 assists, and I thought he moved the ball well, and he didn't dribble the air out of the ball like he has in earlier playoff games. I thought most of the shots he took were good looks, and so I think the 6 of 17 is somewhat of an anomaly, but I agree with you that it felt better than the stats look.
Yeah, there's an energy there. Now, I never look at the box score. Mike Scott seemed like he hit every 3 he took.
3 or 4.
Okay. I would have guessed 9 of 9, but all the same. Mike Scott's a good player. I would definitely like...
Plus 29.
I would definitely like Mike Scott on the team next year.
I mean, he has to.
Yeah.
You don't... Look, I know there's pandering to a fan base, but... You don't have someone get Mike Scott Hive tattooed on their ass and ribs and not give the guy another year or two. Like, you just don't, you can't do it. Like, he's become a sensation. He's like the ultimate from here player. If we're not going to get Marcus Morris, like, he is the third Morris brother. Mike Scott has to stay. He has to remain on this team. He's absolutely a Philadelphia. He's the most from here player we've had in a long time.
Yeah, I would agree. I want his threes, his ninja headband, and his high eyes to be here for the next few years. He definitely has high eyes.
And he's going to get, I mean, definitely at some point. I don't want to happen in this playoffs, but at some point in like a random regular season game against like Phoenix, he's going to get in like a really big fight. Like, he's going to throw a punch. Somebody's going to go down. He's going to miss like 2 months of the season.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah. Right. Mike Scott's gone.
For sure.
Okay.
And then before we get to game 7, I'd like to go to Ref Corner with Mike. Mike, tell me what you thought about that flagrant one that they called on Embiid for just trying to box out Marc Gasol at the end of the game.
I mean, there's just no more fouls anymore. It's either not a foul or it's a flagrant. If you touch someone, it's a flagrant foul. It has become a flagrant foul. If you hit someone by accident or pop, or just like a, if you slow down anything enough, things look egregious and excessive and violent. It's shocking that they reviewed it as much as they did and decided that in the playoffs, in this game, is a flagrant foul. Like, context matters. Context matters to everything. Like, don't say that it doesn't. Like, for refs to make calls, they're like, oh, that's not a call at the end of the game. Like, their context matters, and they factor it in a human way everywhere. And so to know that Embiid has 2 flagrants, one for the Jared Allen elbow, which deservedly is a flagrant. What was the other one for? It pissed me off.
The Jared.
It was blocking Jared Allen.
Yes.
And then they called a foul. That was a terrible one.
Yep.
This is the most egregious one. Just his arm popped up and he got him in the face. Like, that happens. It happens. You pop somebody in the face. People get hit in the face all the time on a basketball court. It's physical. That is not a flagrant foul. A flagrant foul is throwing someone to the ground or elbowing them in the head or kicking at them inexplicably. Like, it's not. I just don't understand. And the league, I swear to God, if the league keeps Embiid 1 flagrant call away from getting suspended for a game in the playoffs, then we should just not have a basketball league in America. It's just shocking. It's shocking that people would let this happen. Like, what's the point of all this? Like, is that going to dissuade Embiid from boxing out or trying to get the ball? Because it's only punishment. It's only punitive. It doesn't make a single amount of sense. Let's think about the intent of the rule is to try to say, hey, when you do egregious, aggressive things, then you should be penalized. But that wasn't egregious and aggressive. That wasn't anything like that. He popped him in the face by accident. They called a foul on it. That's fine. Foul. But it doesn't have to be nearing a suspension in the fucking playoffs. It's just embarrassing. It's just embarrassing that it's come to this.
Yeah. It looked crazy to me. I think there's a significant chance they rescind that. I don't know what they were looking at. I was puzzled by that. There was nothing unnecessary about what he did. The best point you made there is like, do you not just call fouls anymore? Like we don't have to call that a flagrant. There was nothing. Yeah. And there was nothing even chippy about this game. There hasn't really been anything chippy about the entire.
No. Especially not with him Embiid and Gasol. Like if there was chippiness and there was like, oh, there was intent there, then it's like, okay, there's chippiness and it's building to something. But it's just like his hand got knocked up and he popped him in the face on a rebound and you call a foul and that's it. It's embarrassing. And also just a regular officiating thing. Like they're just going to call a foul every time Toronto drives. Every time Toronto drives and there's somebody nearby trying to move their feet and stay in front of them. Like they're just going to, it's just going to be a whistle. It doesn't matter. Kyle Lowry throwing himself at somebody. Kawhi leading with his elbows. Ben needs to learn how to take a charge on Kawhi because it's not like he's beating guys like with like cute Euro steps. He's just going into people. And so Ben just needs to like take a header.
Kawhi does a cool thing where he sort of like moves horizontally into the lane, like sort of sidesteps into it.
And he can still finish with a dunk over it.
Yeah, or like he did one and he got fouled. He got fouled a couple of times. There was the dunk one, and there was another time where he just did like a one-handed, I'd say floater, but it doesn't float. And his shots are pretty light.
He just got his hands are enormous. And the Sixers once again went on a 9-0 run with Kawhi on the bench. Like it's clockwork. They need to just continue to do that. And every time he sits, how many minutes did Kawhi play? Kawhi played 40 and sat, I think, the final three. So they're going to keep playing him that level. He's going to sit 4 minutes a night, and they need to just exploit the hell out of him, like, every single time. It's got to be just, like, relentless. It needs to be, like, a switch flipped when Kawhi's on the court because they can't stop the Sixers without Kawhi on the court. They can't do it. There's too many good guys, and the Sixers they just don't have enough.
So
and then one more thing. Yep. Wait, are we about to go to game seven? Because let me rattle off my game six take still.
Oh, yeah.
Still a frustrating amount of long rebounds.
Yep.
Have you been noticing that more?
Yep. I noticed it tonight. Right. A couple of people tweeted about it, too, about your comment that, like three-pointers mean long rebounds, not short rebounds. It's amazing.
Yeah. Just don't need to walk into each other and funnel in a straight line to go get this rebound. You can sort of, like, hang by the elbow and wait for it to bounce, whatever. Also want to point out the Serge Ibaka seems like a very easily tricked player to me. And Ben fakes him out and Embiid fakes him out all the time. And I want that to keep happening. Ben had a nice juke Serge out of his pants for a nice little touch inside. Ben's touch inside, which we mentioned last podcast, which needs to improve, I thought was very good tonight. I thought his just around the rim game was very solid all around. I liked Tobias a couple times. Posting Lowry, we've talked about that before. When they have it, just go to it right away and let him just back him down and shoot over him from like 5 feet. It's got to be automatic. I thought Tobias also did a good job on Kawhi when he switched onto him. I know we've talked about him as not an excellent defender, but I thought he's been pretty damn good for a guy playing this many minutes and not being like a traditionally elite defender. They doubled Kawhi a little bit with Tobias on him, but mostly to just get the ball out of his hands. And I don't think that it hurt them too much. And the Raptors didn't get too many open threes like they did last game. JJ, fine JJ game. I thought used his fouls well. I thought I really liked that step back into 2003 Duke mode by going the up and under with the English. I didn't think he had it in him anymore. And so that was nice to see. I thought he left some on the table threes wise that he would normally hit, but he 3 of 10. I can accept 3 of 10 in this kind of game. And just there were a couple times when, man, even a hint of contact, a whisper of contact, and JJ is flailing, and that ball's going wherever Toronto wants it to go, because he just does not absorb anything at this point. And he's a strong guy. I don't know what it is. I think it's just an unwillingness to like want to be touched or have any physical contact whatsoever, because, man, he just becomes a 7-year-old when anybody's nearby.
Get a fucking Facebook, JJ. Get a fucking Facebook. Everyone has a Facebook. All right, sorry.
Moving down the list, I thought Mike's got a couple nice cuts as a safety valve. He seems to always have that little like shot clock running down. Somebody's driving baseline, they kick it out to a slowly cutting Mike Scott, and he does that little like floater from 5 feet. Again, just he's so much better than Mike Muscala. That's all we needed him to do, and he is doing it, and I really love it. And then James Ennis. I thought James Ennis played a great game. I thought he was just all over the place and just did all the stuff you wanted to do. He only had 5 points on 6 shots, but a bunch of rebounds, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, moving the ball well, poked the ball out from Kawhi, caused drew an offensive foul on Kawhi, and just attacking the offensive glass like always. I thought he's giving you, this is like the best version of James Ennis. Usually, Unterberger says that if James Ennis hits a three, they are going to win. He didn't hit one tonight, but I thought he still did enough to make up for it. And then I want to shout out TJ for just doing a great job on the bench. Just doing a great job, keeping everybody active, keeping everybody alive.
What do we think of the TJ bird wings? The Embiid.
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah. I mean,
you can't be a coward, man. No cowardice here. Yeah. So
Sixers. And I'm sad that I don't object to Boban playing a little bit. Or trying it out. Yeah. See what you get for him. But he just can't play in the series. It's tough. I love him, but it's tough.
It's when the options are that bad and you're this early in the playoffs, right? Like, just play everybody 46 minutes is like, if you can steal 5 minutes with Boban when Greg Monroe, when has turned back into a pumpkin, I don't mind him trying it. And he realized it was bad pretty quick.
Who do you want to see? I know we're about to talk to game seven, but who would you want to see in those non-Embiid minutes? Say there's 10 non-Embiid minutes in game seven. Who do you want?
Well, everyone keeps saying, well, I want to see Ben there or Mike Scott there, but it doesn't work that way. Right, because like they got to play minutes in the for other guys. Like I think you need to play. Are we saying that it has to be an actual center or no?
I think you can steal
because
4 minutes from a Ben Tobias, Mike Scott, Jimmy Butler, Redick or Ennis lineup. I think you could steal 4 minutes. In this game, but Gasol and Ibaka and Kawhi and Siakam are all really big and they're tough to stop. That's an automatic bucket if they get the ball inside like that. So I don't think you can do it all the time. I would like to have at least some backup center you can play 6 minutes. So do you think that you can get 6 decent minutes out of Amir? Do you think Greg Monroe is well rested from his ankle injury?
It's a funny thing you say. Well, first of all, and their small lineup got roasted tonight. Didn't work. They did it really short. I would try Amir over Greg Monroe. At least he knows where to fucking be. And I would try Amir over Greg Monroe. But Boban's not an option. To me, Jonah, I have a lot less faith in Jonah Bolden than you do. I would try Amir. But what a fucking statement that is. I would try Amir.
What I would do is I would try to identify 3 minutes in the first. I would have two guys on hand that you're like, all right, I'm going to try this guy in the first half for 3 minutes. And if I can get away with that, I'll play him in the second half for 3 minutes. And if it doesn't work for that minutes, then I'm ready to play the other guy for those 3 minutes in the second half, in like the end of the third or whatever it is, whenever they want to sit Embiid. And so I would probably try Jonah for the first 3 minutes just to spread the floor. There were a lot of times tonight when the paint was just so clogged and there's just nowhere for anybody to go. At the very least, Jonah on the perimeter, they have to acknowledge him. You know what I mean? Like I think at the very least that, and he gives you some level of like energy and shot blocking. I know that all the negative things that come with it for sure, but I think I would try him for 3 minutes, see if he's controlled and doing okay. And then if that sucks, then I'd go to Amir probably for the second half.
Amir. So game seven is Sunday night. Thank you for making it Sunday night, as it is Mother's Day, which clears my brunch schedule.
It is Sunday night.
Sunday night.
I didn't know that.
7 o'clock. Yeah.
Okay. I will be in Philadelphia for this.
Oh, really?
That's correct. My flight is tomorrow. I take a red eye tomorrow night.
Oh, wow. Oh, for the lottery party. You're going to be here for it.
For the lottery party.
Wow.
That's right.
Well, all right. Whatever. The Raptors are a 7-point favorite, which is pretty in line with their other home games. They've been around 6, 6.5, the other home games, which is a significant favorite, but not too different than like Denver over Portland. Houston is a 6.5-point favorite over Golden State, which, by the way, I think is a mistake. Sunday night in Toronto, I don't even know what to say other than I believe that the Sixers are going to win the game. That's it. I think coming out, not getting down early will be like, I think like if they get down early, they could get caught under a wave, which seems to happen during this series.
Yeah.
But, you know, who wants to get down early? It's not like it's a fucking strategy to not get down early. So what do you think?
I think what has to happen is the opposite of what happened in game five. It just can't be. They have to do everything they can to make it be Kawhi dribbling the air out of the ball and Siakam dribbling the air out of the ball. If it's zipping around the perimeter to open guy and Danny Green's hitting everything and Kyle Lowry's stepping into threes confidently and Marc Gasol has all day, I think that they're going to lose. And so you have to just say, we're going to stay home on a bunch of guys. We're going to make Kawhi beat us in the mid-range. And that's going to happen a lot, but he's also going to turn the ball over a little bit. He had 4 turnovers tonight. I think he has gotten tired. He seems to be short on a lot of things. He's still very, very good, obviously. But I think you just say, we're staying home. We're not going to give them wide-open looks from three. We're going to make Siakam beat Embiid, and we're going to make Kawhi beat Ben, and hopefully Ben can avoid foul trouble. He had a couple frustration fouls, which I think he's got to watch because that could really hurt them. And so that's the thing I'm looking at. Like Gasol didn't have a basket until the fourth quarter, I think, or late in the third. Danny Green, he had 1-3 in transition and 1-3 like at the end of the shot clock where he just rose up even with JJ right in his face, and that was a tough shot. He can hit those, but he was not getting a ton of easy looks tonight like he did in game five. Van Vliet is not someone that has impacted the series in really any way. They don't want to play Norm Powell. They don't want to play McCaw. It's going to be Ibaka in the starting five basically. And, I think you just got to say we'll live with Kawhi scoring 38 in a loss.
Yeah, I would agree. Boy, you've come around. You've come around.
No, I mean, that's what we talked about in the Giannis game.
Yeah,
the big Embiid Giannis game. Yep. It was like Giannis took like what 11 threes. Embiid took 10. It was like very like these guys are daring. It's kind of a 1-on-1 game, and the Sixers have enough players where they can counteract that, but Toronto doesn't. And so the only way Toronto's can compete with the Sixers, I think, is if they have a lot of open looks based on the Sixers overhelping and not communicating and all that stuff. And I think it's just like as much as you can stay home and force a lot of like isolation basketball.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, the time that we've looked most helpless, the Sixers have looked most helpless in this series, I don't even think was game one. I think it was game five where Lowry got involved and Gasol got involved. And look, some of this is luck too. Gasol had like 3 or 4 wide open threes in the first half that he just didn't make. And if who knows what happens if those go in, but I will live with that. Like I will live with Pau Gasol, Marc Gasol rather, shooting threes. Where is Pau Gasol? Did he play with the Bulls this year? Who is? What team?
No, he's on Milwaukee.
Oh, right.
He's hurt on Milwaukee.
Right. So yeah, I agree.
Think it's nice that it's the game Sunday. So I think if Embiid was at, like, you know, what do you want to say, 75% tonight?
Yeah, he's got an extra 80? Day, extra day off.
He's got an extra day.
We could have three game sevens on Sunday, by the way.
That's exciting.
Yeah, all in a row. And somehow, the Sixers are the middle one. I guess the Golden State game would be at 10:30.
Okay. It's much, I got to say, now I'm home for Mother's Day, so now that has to factor in. But it's so nice when the games are starting earlier.
Seven?
Especially on a weekend. Yeah. It's very nice. It's just easy. You have the rest of your night. It's all the good stuff. But I think tonight is the template.
What are all the Game of Thrones dorks going to do? They're going to have to look at Twitter for the Sixers game.
And watch it after.
And the other dorks are going to be spoiling it on Twitter.
Yeah, for the most part, people are good at not spoiling. For the most part.
Well, so I don't know anything about the show. I only see that people tweet about it during the show.
Yeah. But it's like vague.
I don't get any of the fucking memes. I don't even, not today. That's okay, man. I don't even know what that means. Whatever.
That's all right, man.
Yeah. Sunday night. Game seven.
Sunday night. I would love for Embiid to just go out there and just fucking
run over him.
Be better than Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
Just like on every possession. And just be like, this is not going to happen. I would love Tobias Harris to shoot well, Ben to bring the level of aggression he did, Jimmy, same thing, go to the rim, drive and kick, JJ keep scoring off movements, keep finding ways to dribble handoff. I don't even think they did that many dribble handoffs tonight with JJ, but he did find a way to get open a handful of times. And Mike Scott and James Ennis, keep doing your fucking thing, guys. I'll be interested to see who Brett goes with as that center. I think it's going to be somebody. I would guess it's Greg Monroe, but I would like to. I think the upside of Jonah is pretty high, even if not for himself scoring, it's for like just the lane being open. You know what I mean?
Little did we know we'd have another silent tournament, this time in the playoffs.
Yes.
Between five people to be the backup center. It's a silent tournament
for 3 minutes and 45 seconds.
and by the way,
that's all we need.
Those 3 minutes and 45 seconds could mean a negative, like, fucking 25 if we're not careful. Yeah.
I know.
Amazing. All right. Well, we will talk to you after the after Game 7. We'll either be going to the Eastern Conference Finals or the season will be over. Boy, that's some shit, isn't it? Wow.
I knew it wasn't going to end today. I was at least saying it a lot. Not today. It wasn't going to happen.
I got cyber bullied out of making a prediction anymore because I predicted they would win in the last game and they didn't win. People are like, oh yeah? What? You said they would win. All right. What the fuck do I know? I said the Celtics would win 68 games. You know, I don't know anything. Boy, they fucking hate
Kyrie. Everyone's impression of a person they don't agree with is the same thing.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Every single person, no matter what. It's the same, same thing.
Yeah. Wait, two quick questions. Actually, just one quick question. Who wins game six of Houston Golden State?
I'll say Houston.
Okay. I think.
I know you're anti-Kevin Durant.
I am.
Or maybe it's just pro Harrison Barnes.
I'm pro Harrison. I'm pro Steph, but I am anti-Kevin Durant. I do think it would be funny to see them win a championship, not only not with him, but like with his roster spot completely unused. I think it would be great. Like, what would he do? Would he celebrate at the end? Like, how does he act? Can he leave at that point? Does he have to come back? Whatever.
I think the only thing is that without, not to spend too much time on the Warriors, but like they just don't have enough shooters to play with. So like in times when Steph or Clay is sitting, because they'll sit for like 8 minutes each, like it's just gonna be one shooter on the court like at a time, and so you just like sell out on that person and say like, okay, fine, go beat me. So I think the Rockets will win one at home.
We will talk to you on Sunday night.
Shit, I gotta pack my microphone, I guess.
Yes, you should.
Or should I like ride down to the fucking studio?
We could do that too, but I won't be at the studio, so we would both have to ride to the studio.
Oh, interesting. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Pack the mic just in case, you know.
Okay.
All right, are you done with TTP?
Yeah, you know. Lick face.
We are the murderous pair. That with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. True runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cope in the clouds on a missile to turn.